So we'll take now there's a period for 45 minutes for a walking meditation for those of you who'd like. And as I said before, be kind of a, the more you give yourself over to the day, the more fully this day will have its own momentum for you and unfolding. But to do so in a relaxed way and try not to do much extra, but keep it simple the day. For those of you who'd like to be part of a question and answer session, we'll take a 5 minute break and then I'll come back and we'll start for about 25 minutes or so. And the way we'll do it, because I think it's much more manageable, is you can type a question in the notes section, I think, of your of the website, the IRO. And there might be too many questions for me to answer. So the managers will select one or a few of them for me to answer. And we'll read them out loud. But what I ask is that the questions you ask are not so personal that they're not really, try to answer, ask questions you might be a little bit more relevant for more than just yourself. And ideally, especially in the afternoon, the Q&A, a little bit more related to the themes of the day or the practice of the day. And we'll come back. And so in about 5 minutes, I'll be back and we can, those of you who'd like, we can do a little Q&A time. So thank you.
Generally, the questions can be asked by going to the upper right of the screen and looking for the questions for Q&A link.
Great, thank you. So we can start, and the idea is that the questions will be asked, typed into the questions. So Sally, I see your hand, but the idea is that they're all going to be written. If you can able to do that, that would be nice. And so one of the managers, I think, is going to read a question, and I'll do my best to answer.
Okay, so the first question is, I noticed a lot of time in the searching and reacting mode. How do we support more of the emerging mode?
Very nice. There's a one little trick for it, is to appreciate that when the searching and reacting is in a certain kind of way emerging as well. Even though it might not feel that way, like we're doing it, but to kind of to step back and be mindful of that mode. Oh, here I am reacting, and allow for that to be there, as opposed to try to get past it or be seeking the emerging mode. It's like you can't, you know, to seek too much the emerging mode is to be caught in the seeking mode. And so, but to just whatever is happening, to be mindful of that. And then as you're mindful of it, can you some way allow for that to be there without further reactivity, without further judgment, or without seeking or fixing or being aversive? And so what's important here is this, keep returning to awareness of what actually is. And that's one of the strongest ways to begin making room for the emergent to appear. It helps a lot to then relax. The searching and the reacting are not relaxed modes, but to be aware of these, that way of being, makes space to relax. So hopefully that gives you some idea of what you might do. There's more to be said, but I'd like to leave it at that. So the next one.
I find the word pleasure, quote unquote, a bit confusing. Is it the physical sensation of breathing that I look to for pleasure? I then seem to revert to quote unquote searching. Where am I to find this pleasure that Gil always refers to? Is it really the process and the ability to breathe?
Yeah. I think different people experience it differently, and and individual people experience it differently at different times. It can be in the sensations of breathing themselves, that there's a sense of pleasantness, pleasure, a sense of rightness, feels good to be there. It could be not necessarily in the specific sensations of breathing, but it might be almost like a glow that's kind of the gestalt or the wholeness of breathing. It just feels like it's happening in a field, a glowing field that I've had. I know some people who refer to it as with the language as beautiful. There's a beauty there, and instead of using the word pleasure. But it's a little bit more amorphous. It's a little bit more like you might be looking in your garden and appreciate the flowers, but then you also might just appreciate the ambience of the morning in the garden. And you can't point to the ambience, what exactly it is. So it could be the ambience that's there with the attention to breathing. It might be that there's a certain kind of pleasure in the mind, where the receptivity or the openness of attention itself has something that feels really nice, welcoming, something we enjoy or appreciate that could qualify as pleasure. So it's found in different ways, but certainly searching for it might not work so well. But not opening to it, not attuning to it, also, you know, we might overlook it. I mean, there's sometimes usually much more pleasure available to people and then we avail ourselves of, partly because we're preoccupied with our reactions, or preoccupied with our searching or seeking or wanting something, or caught up in some concern we have, or some people are oriented towards discomfort, and always looking for something and to protect ourselves from discomfort or pain, so it isn't like we're searching for the pleasure, as it is allowing for it and giving ourselves permission to feel it if it's there. If it's not there, if it's not kind of easy and obvious, it's not really the time to go searching for it or making it happen or making it a big deal. Then it's just a time to just keep doing the practice. And over time, pleasure will arise. Something pleasant will arise in the practice, the nature of the practice. It'll go in that direction. And then part of the reason I want to give this teaching is that so that when the pleasure comes, that you recognize it. Oh, there's this dharmic pleasure. There's this the pleasure of meditation. And I'm allowed to experience it. Some people have never gotten the message, actually. That some people have gotten the opposite message growing up, that they're not supposed to feel pleasure, they're not supposed to have things pleasant. And the more you suffer, the closer you are to religion or something. And so this idea of you have permission to feel the pleasure. Some people are, I think meditation is so serious, it's too serious to have pleasure. I think probably that's the way I was when I was a Zen student. Pleasure was kind of too sentimental or too artificial or too namby-pamby or something. It just was kind of like, it's not really the real stuff. I was a Zen student. I was there for the real stuff, just like directly encountering true reality or something. And it was a big eye-opener for me when I started doing Vipassana practice, where we were allowed to experience pleasure. And not only were we allowed, but it was actually a door opener. It was actually a way of opening into a deeper states of meditation. So hopefully that was answered the question.
So maybe we can go to the other end of the spectrum from pleasure. If fear feels too big for mindfulness to hold, what can we do?
Yeah, I think that takes a little bit of strategizing to think about what might be helpful for the person who has such strong fear. Maybe mindfulness is not the right thing to do. If it's too much for mindfulness, metta would do better, and to do loving kindness with it. And maybe that then it's possible to be close to it and make space for it and somehow settle it with loving kindness or compassion. If we were just talking about meditation itself, occasionally it might be appropriate to ignore it if possible. You might know it's there, but let it be in the background, but just kind of don't address it directly. Maybe just kind of focusing on relaxing the body and breathing deeply, breathing in a way that's an alternative, so that mind is not caught in the fear or focused on the fear, wherever it is in the body, because that actually can set in sometimes a loop where we get more afraid. There's a lot of benefit from learning how to pull away from the fear that for some meditators is only learned by stopping to meditate. Like just open your eyes and look around the room, look out a window, and just kind of glance at whatever is nice to look at in the room and have your eyes roam around. And maybe that settles something. And learning to have confidence that we can not get caught in fear is very helpful for mindfulness practice, because then when fear comes, you know, if you want to, you can somehow modulate it or reduce it or not get caught in it, you have, you know, you have the means, and then it's there can be more confidence. It's okay, I can be mindful of this now, because as soon as I feel like I need to, I can pull out. If opening your eyes and looking around the room is not enough, maybe do walking meditation. I've done that sometimes, where walking meditation is the way to hold the fear and allow it to be there. It's just easier. It might be going and get a cup of tea or have a little snack, or distract yourself, you know, go for a walk around the block. But learning some ability within reason to if the fear is too strong, to settle it, to shake it out, to do some exercise or yoga or whatever, or do something, go someplace that feels really safe. So to learn the skill of somehow reducing it in other ways besides mindfulness and meditation. And then when you're ready, come back. And then part of mindfulness meditation around fear is to begin understanding some of the ecology of fear, the ecosystem, the different dynamics that come into play. When it's too much to be mindful of fear, what is actually happening? Is there fear of fear? Is it really mindfulness you have, or is it really a kind of mindfulness mixed with the imagination? Oh, if I do this, this is going to happen, or and so the imagining how it's going to get worse, or does the mindfulness itself trigger more of the storytelling mind? So begin looking and seeing what are the dynamics, what's happening there when it's too much, but always ready to learn to step away if it becomes too much. So maybe that's enough for now.
So next question. In my experience, the dharmic pleasure comes not as a gentle awareness, but as a tsunami that swamps me. I feel like my boundaries dissolve and waves of joy or compassion come unbidden, course through me and leave me physically exhausted. Any suggestions on how to deal with this?
Yeah. So when people get really settled and concentrated in meditation, the dharmic pleasures can be sometimes quite intense. And sometimes so intense that it's, you know, more than people want to have. And it can be tiring and exhausting. And I don't have one shoe fits all as a response to that question. I appreciate the question. But there here also, it's very helpful to learn the skill of pulling oneself out of those states. And sometimes it can be actually hard if it's really intense to pull out of it, but it can be done, including like getting up for meditation and, again, eating or drinking tea or going for a vigorous walk or taking a nap or doing something to learn the skill. There's a very important skill in meditation for any state that arises that seems challenging, whether it's, you know, very emotionally challenging state like fear, or a challenging because it's so intense like the pleasure, to develop the skill to pull out. And then for someone who has issues with real intense pleasure, to see it coming, and then learn to relax before it gets too strong, or learn how to interrupt it by opening your eyes and taking a deep breath, or start thinking about, I don't know what, thinking about your shopping list, what you need, you know, what you're going to cook for supper, you know, anything that kind of, anything at all that helps to bring you back into a more settled or more less intense mode of being, and then start again, but always knowing that you can pull yourself out, and that ability to pull out becomes, can become stronger and more and more capable over time. So if the intensity of the pleasure becomes too much, the same as I said with the fear, that you say, okay, well, I know it's a lot, but I know I can pull out if I want to. And sometimes you just want to relax into the intensity. And as you relax into the intensity, not reacting to the intensity, it might, it is like a wave. And at some point you'll find yourself on the backside of the wave. Another option is that sometimes when the a dharmic pleasure is too intense for people, it's usually a sign, I don't want to say usually, it's sometimes a sign that the way that we're paying attention, the way the mindfulness and concentration is too constricted, is too tight, too forceful. There's maybe a little bit of striving in it, or it's gotten bottlenecked in some place. And so if that dharmic pleasure begins to surface before it gets intense, you want to try to relax and suffuse it and pervade it through the body. So it's not bottled up in any one place, or so that it doesn't get narrowed down. And it's when it gets narrowed and bottlenecked where it tends to, for some people, tends to be too much. But if it tends to be relaxed enough so it pervades the whole body, it tends to be more manageable for people. So I hope though these ideas is just enough to give you something to practice with, and certainly more can be said. Maybe we have, I think we have time for maybe one or two more.
What's a good way to settle back towards relaxation when a thought is overactivating?
Yeah. Two things that I found useful. One is when thinking is really strong and highly activated, is I practice mindfulness of thinking. I don't react to the fact that my mind is overthinking. I don't treat myself as bad or wrong or that this is not supposed to be happening. My mindfulness is, well, this too now should be brought into the scope of attention. This too should be recognized. And not just recognized with a simple note, like check it off, but rather to open up and to be mindful and sense and feel the experience of an activated mind, what it feels like physically, and the tension, the tightness, the activation, that what part of the body is activated, and make space to feel that for a while. Take your time to really sense and feel the bigger picture, bigger experience of the activated thinking that's more than just the content of the thoughts. So physically, what's happening? Chances are that if it's overactivated, there is some kind of emotion that's part of it as well. And so what's the emotion that, or emotions, what is the beliefs? What is the attachments? What is the fears that are operating and that activated? Because it might be the emotions, the attitudes that are connected to it is what needs our attention more than the thoughts themselves. And as we get to know as we take time to know it, just that can sometimes settle it by itself. It just relaxes, and because we're not feeding it with the old interest in it. But also, as you get to know it better, you might start to discover where in your body there's tension associated with that kind of thinking. And chances are something is tightened up, there's some kind of pressure or tension somewhere in the psychophysical system. And if you've discovered that, then you can relax that. You can actually take time to intentionally soften and relax the tension that's associated with overactive thinking. Thank you.
One more?
Yeah.
Okay. I have noticed over the years that open awareness always seems to get preoccupied in the default position of being negative. I do not react to the negativity, but it seems to be my constant companion. I have now started to actively introduce thoughts of joy and wonder, and I feel that this is helping me make some shifts. Could you please comment?
Well, it sounds like what you're doing is a nice thing to do. And maybe as a corrective, it could be nice. Chances are that if you get caught in negativity, that itself is probably you know, some kind of subtle, maybe even subconscious thinking going on, beliefs that are going on. And so you're kind of offering a counter to that, and maybe a reconditioning and this other way of thinking. But what I think happens to some people who do open awareness practice is that they are relying on open awareness too much and don't actually do enough investigation of what their experience is. And sometimes mindfulness involves taking a deeper look at what's actually going on, recognizing it's almost like open awareness for some people. I'm not saying this is the case for the questioner, but that open awareness sometimes would be like keep looking at the space in the room and not the objects of the room. And but if you're looking at the space all the time, but your dog is just running around the room, knocking over all the china and you know, pooping in the corner for, you know, while you're just looking at the space, something is going to go amiss. So eventually the room is going to be a very uncomfortable place to be in, even if you're mostly looking at the space. But if you, sometimes you have to kind of actually come out of the open awareness a little bit to, or quite a bit, to actually begin seeing what's actually happening here. What are the thoughts? What are the emotions? What are the tensions that I have? It might be mean that to actually look at that negativity in a deeper, more sustained way. Otherwise, it operates kind of off, you know, offline, or kind of in a dog running around or something. And what's wonderful about the open awareness practice is that it's a wonderful practice. So if you have that ability to do that, the art of it is to keep the, it's kind of an open, relaxed awareness. Try to keep it that way. Don't tighten up to investigate something, but rather, so like if we use the hand, the open hand as a metaphor for open awareness, and some people when they concentrate, they take all the fingers and bring them all together as all in a point, and you're kind of focusing, you know, on something with your finger, like really poking at it. And but rather than doing that, you have the open awareness, a relaxed state of mind. Take the relaxed state of mind, and the most sensitive part of the palm is the center of the palm, the hand. Kind of stay open and relaxed, but really bring that negativity, or the feelings, or the emotions, or whatever's going on, and really feel and sense it at the most sensitive place of the mind to get to know it well. But if you find yourself, the mind contracting in order to know the negativity, then soften and go back into the open awareness, and then try again, get close again. It's like you're bringing the open awareness really close to feel your breathing, to feel your emotions, to feel, you know, the thoughts that come in. So I hope that makes sense, what I say to the person that asked the question. And it's an important question. So if what I said doesn't relate to how you asked the question, you can maybe send another message. So we have maybe if there's one more question and I can answer quickly.
Can the pleasure feel sensual in nature?
Yes. And this, I'll talk more about this. It can be very sensual. Some people will say that some of this dharmic pleasure, especially when it's quite intense, is so sensual and so wonderful that it's better than any pleasure of sex, because it's so intense and so wonderful. And it can be much more sustained and last a longer time, for example. So some people make those kinds of comments. And so it can feel very sensual. The difference is that, and this is maybe, I'll try to talk about this again a little bit later, is that sometimes it's considered non-sensual, even though it feels sensual, because it has to do with the origin, the source of the pleasure. If the pleasure is, the source of the pleasure is from the external world stimulated our senses, then it's considered sensual in its origin. It's called sensual. It's called, in the Dharma, it's sometimes called non-sensual pleasure. If not because of the conditions of the world being just right, and you're getting a massage, or you're getting nice food or something, or you're having wonderful, pleasant fantasies in your mind, it's a pleasure that emerges from the harmonious functioning of a concentrated mind. And it's not being stimulated by anything in the world. It's almost like it arises from within by itself. And it can arise, and the energy of it sometimes can be quite strong, and it kind of like from the inside out might spread into the places in the body where you usually feel sensual pleasure coming from the outside. But it's the source of it is non sense based in a sense. So I'll try to say this again later when we're all together, when I talk more about this. But for now, maybe that's what we'll do. So let's stop, and we have about 11 minutes or so, 10 minutes before the next sitting. So it might be a good time to stretch, to get some fresh air, and then we'll be back at 9:45.